Welcome to Swine Time here at Pipestone. I want to welcome our guest we have today with us. It's Hannah Walkus. Hannah isn't my boss. She's not the boss of me. She's the boss of the boss of the boss of me, I think. Hannah does a lot of things in our company. Somebody I've known for a while, I call her a good friend, and she's also very smart. And I've asked Hannah to be our guest today to talk about filtration. And so if we got some things to discuss here, hopefully we hit all the points and the listeners have a pretty good idea of when we look at filtration, what we mean. So welcome, Hannah. I see that you are here despite coronavirus, and we haven't died yet, and people are showing up at work today.
Yeah, I made sure to practice my social distance except for this podcast, and have really stocked up on my toilet paper and hand sanitizer, so I think I'm good to go.
Yeah. So, filtration. I'd say, what is it? But maybe just go through a little bit of history, because I know when you and I both started working here, that was kind of right before we started putting filters in barns. So maybe you could take us through the history.
Yeah, absolutely. So all the stuff that we know about filtration originally, I got to give credit to Dr. Scott D. When he was at the University of Minnesota, he did some testing up at the University of Minnesota Research Farm in northern Minnesota that really proved that when you put filters on farms, you could keep PERS out of those barns successfully. And so we had quite a few sow farms that broke multiple times per year with different strains of PERS, and really were forced to come up with a solution on those farms just to keep those producers in business. So we brought Scott in while he was still with the U of M, and really worked with him and Dr. Steve Pohl at SDSU to really give it a go and try it on a couple of those farms in northwest Iowa. And here we are, that was in 2006, here we are 14 years later, and not only are we doing it, but we're doing it in about all the sows that we operate.
Yeah, so early 2000s, I remember Scott had that Appleton Holloway farm, a couple little tiny barns up there, and then he kept track of the wind direction and basically showed over the course of a few years, yeah, it stops it. The filters will stop it. Not as good, but good was just good biosecurity, and then not good at all was no biosecurity.
Correct.
So we had that, and then the first farms were bore studs. There was a couple of them down here by Pipestone. Other companies had some farms being filtered about the same time or shortly thereafter. And since then, yeah, what is it? Two-thirds of our farms.
Yeah, we've got well over 200,000 sows that are under filtration today. That's within the Pipestone System Management Company. And then we have hundreds of thousands of sows for independent family farms that we would consult with and help them.
Okay. So farms are filtered. They've been in there for several years. How successful has it been? Has it been like, oh, it's slam dunk and never get PERS again? How would you describe the success rate once you put a filter in a barn?
Well, I wish it was that easy as slam dunk. It has proven to be very successful. We've been able to reduce our PERS risk by about 70%, our infection rate. And so it is successful, but it's just like anything, it's not perfect. It is one mitigation tool to keep PERS out via air. You still have to step up your biosecurity. You still have to make sure that you know, your supplies coming in, your people coming in, your trucks going out, your animals coming in, all are focused on as well. And so you can't get sloppy in any of those areas. Mm-hmm. So we've had 14 years where we've been doing this, and we continually learn, and I would say come up with ideas to focus on those areas to help us be successful because of filtration, but not just because
right.
of it.
So learning curve, to learn, you know, so how many years, 14 years?
Yeah, 14, 16 or something like that.
Yeah, so 14 years. And I remember the first ones getting, oh, well, this works. And then you'd find some weakness, and it would be the way we foamed around the boxes up in the attic, or it'd be how we pumped the manure. I mean, there was one thing after another.
Yes.
When I'm talking to somebody, a client that's considering it, it's like, why do you do this? Well, there was some reason for it, and some expensive lesson that got learned in one of those barns as we figured it out. So a lot of like stupid stuff that we take for granted now, but we had to find out the hard way with some barn that broke with PERS because we didn't realize something was as important as it was.
Yeah, we like to say that there's the edge that we live at, and some days it can be the cutting edge, and sometimes it can be the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
And we've definitely, I would say, been on both sides of that sword with this technology. But nonetheless, we have some producers that would not have been able to stay in production had they not had this technology. And from a grand level, we would say it's been very successful.
Yeah. So, you know, from the early days until now, just the product itself, the type of filter, that's changed a lot. And we've gotten involved in, you know, handling that product. And it's changed over the years. Can you just say, well, here's what we used to use, here's what we got now, here's why Can you go through a little of that?
Well, we started with a brand back in 2006, and really because it was the only one that we knew about. And then as we started using more of those filters, the price went up and not down. So then we sought another option. And again, price went up, not down. And so in about 2013, we took a pretty dramatic step forward, and we actually entered the filter supply chain and entered into an agreement with 3M at that time and actually started selling filters. We really did that for two reasons. One, we wanted to drive the price down, and entering the supply chain allowed us to kind of take out the layers in the middle. Just by getting into the supply chain that year, we took the price of filtration down by about 30% in 1 year. So that was successful. The second reason we got into the supply chain was because we wanted to help learn, and we wanted to have more direct impact on the design of the filters to try to get them designed so they could last longer. And being a partner with 3M allowed us to do that as well. So it's not sexy. We have to have warehouse space. We've got to have distribution trucks. It's a lot of work, a lot of capital. But for the cost and for the continued innovation, we think it's the right move.
Yeah. Interesting. Just kind of thinking back through time, Scott D, before he started here, we had set a little lab up out in one of the sheds where he was fogging one side with virus in the air to confirm that it stopped the virus, and over showing which filters worked, which ones didn't. That was so early. And then the types of filters. We were using polypropylene filters a lot earlier on, more and more. That's been fiberglass, which is a more durable type right now. Different characteristics entirely. But there's a couple filter types. We've kind of settled on what we know is the best long-term potential to survive now in a barn, giving good protection. I don't know.
Yeah. So we utilize a third-party lab based out of Minneapolis. There's actually three labs in the United States that have the ability to test the filter the way we need them to, and one happens to be located just down the road in Minneapolis. So we use them to test all of our filters as an independent third party. We also have about 6 to 8 different types, kinds, sizes, whatever it may be, being tested in our research barn at any given time, because we don't want to get complacent and stick with what we're doing just because that's what we've always done. We want to continue to push the envelope to have a filter that lasts as long as it possibly can at the lowest price point possible to help save our customers money.
Right. Okay. So all of our barns are negative pressure, I think, which is you listeners out there, anybody that's got a pig barn, that would be the way you'd ventilate almost all the time. You're sucking air in the barn through fans that are blowing it out. And so there's inlets sucking air in through the attic, typically, or through a cool cell. But not every barn's like that. All of ours are, but I know people filter barns that aren't. What are the two types?
Yeah, so there's a positive and a negative pressure filtration style. So think of one as a push and one as a pull kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And all of the pipestone system forms would be negative pressure. And that's not because that's right and the other way is wrong. They're both good options. It's just we started out with negative pressure back in 2006. Our team got good at it. Our protocols are built on it. And we didn't want to confuse the team that was doing it with two different ways of how you have to operate. And so negative pressure has been successful for us, but we also consult with a lot of clients that have had good luck with positive pressure too. Both are very good at keeping the virus out, which is what's important.
Okay. So the big question, this is the one that if a farmer is out there listening or a guy that's thinking about filtering his barn, what's the cost, roughly? How do you look at that? Because I've been through a few of these exercises with producers, and it varies, but where does it settle now? If you've got our older barns, got to get retrofitted, for example.
Yeah, well, it was a lot more expensive when we first started. We've been able to drive that cost down for a variety of reasons. But the economics today, how we kind of look at it is the cost of filtration is about $1 to $1.50 a pig, depending upon if it's a new build versus a retrofit. And then if you just compare that to, cost of PERS, does it make sense for me to filter or not? The published cost of PERS is about $8. Now, there's some Iowa State study that was published here many years ago. And if you just think, well, it's $1 to $1.50 a year versus an $8 expense of PERS, if I can prevent one virus in 8 years, I've basically paid for the cost of my filter. And then it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, these farms that live with bad chronic PERS, I'd say it's easily $10 a pig, $15 a pig, including the nursery and the finishing and the losses and the medicine, the slow growth and bad conversion. It's just stupid ugly where it would easily pay for itself. Sometimes it's less obvious. When you said $1 to $1.50 a pig, is that the steady cost of, so I'm going to filter my barn and now my cost of making a pig isn't $35, it's $36.50. That's what it's going to be. That's the steady cost. That's not the initial capitalization of it. That's the steady cost.
Yeah, so that would actually be both. That would be the capitalization, the build-in on a new construction, and then it would also be the replacement of filters over a set period of time. It would also include a full-time employee that would be dedicated to just making sure those filters are working, that there's no holes, that things are plugged, and that the system is working properly. Okay. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, we have in the system, we have a filter compliance technician, or it's maybe got a different acronym now, but it's that person. And not all they do, but sometimes most of what they do is just simply to go around and make sure the filters are working, no air is leaking in. That's got to be part of the equation. One of the early lessons we learned, I remember, was you don't just put the filters on and leave them, because when you break, then you come back in and realize, well, none of the stuff's working because nobody was watching it. So you got to watch it. All right. So good. $150 a pig is what I heard. Any comment on like per sow space, just the initial, because that gets kind of scary. I don't know if you've got anything that could vary a lot.
It varies a lot. It really depends on the barn design, whether or not you plan to go positive or negative pressure. Again, new construction versus a retrofit. I would say if you do have questions on that, reach out to your veterinarian. We've got experts on our team that I would say have seen it all, and we would be happy to put you in contact with them, and they can walk you through your individual situation and give you a cost estimate.
Okay, good. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Hannah. Swine Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country. Hosted by me, Dr. Spencer Wayne, with the Pipestone Veterinary Services. The podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Monthly podcasts are available on Spotify, Google Music, iTunes, Anchor, and on www.pipestone.com.